How's everyone doing this morning? You guys feeling a little tired? Glad to be here this morning? Yes? Hello, everyone? Okay. I know we're probably a little sparse this morning just because it's probably a long weekend. Everyone's kind of headed out of town. But I'm glad that you could be here today. I feel like asking everyone to kind of just like come forward because it's so empty. You guys want to step up and come forward a little bit? No? Yeah, let's do that. Okay, you know, it's a bit more cozy, I guess, than having us all so spread out like this. Maybe the people in upstairs want to come downstairs too, you know, so you don't feel so lonely up there. All right. Thank you so much, everyone, for here we go. Doesn't feel so far now, you know? So this morning, we're going to be starting a new sermon series. And we've entitled it, Living Well in Uncertain Times, 10 Commandments for 21st Century Generation. You know, as I look at this title again, I think now, you know, maybe what I should have done is I should have put a proposition before the living well, as in, are we living well in uncertain times? You know, I bet if we ask this question of our grandparents, are we living well in uncertain times? I'm sure they would say, yes, we are. Because, you see, they went through some real uncertain times, especially if you have grandparents who lived through World War II, who remember what it was like to live through the Japanese occupation, like my grandfather. Or maybe grandparents who lived through the German occupation and in Europe as well, as Shari's grandparents remember that. So of course they'll say, yeah, you guys have no concept what it is to live in uncertain times. If we ask our parents of this question, I too believe they would say, yeah, actually we are living well in uncertain times because you see, some of our parents may have lived through the economic bust of the 80s. And the threat of real nuclear war, which, as we look at it now, wasn't as bad as the recession that Canada is currently experiencing, or the war in Iraq that seems to go on and on forever. So if I were to pose this question to you today, what would your response be? Are we living well in uncertain times? I'm serious. What do you guys think? Yeah? Yeah? Okay. No, yes, no, I hear mutterings, yes, no? Yes? Yes, we're living well in uncertain times, okay. Anyone from the back row over there? Yeah, kinda, maybe. See, the thing is that if you were to take this question out on the street right now, chances are most likely you're gonna get a 50-50 answer. You know, for most people say, yeah, some of us, yeah, we are. Some of us, yeah, we're not. You know, and I think it's partly because of the fact that we've just, as a country, as a world, we've just gone through a real economic uptime, and then all of a sudden things have just dropped, and so now we're like, oh, maybe we're not as well off, and yet in actual fact we are still living really well. But you know, here's the truth here. Truth be told, is that every generation will think that the generation after them, okay, so for the youth here, your kids and your grandkids. You'll hope and think that they will live much better than you will because they will not have gone through some of the difficulties that you are experiencing right now. That's just the way it is. But see, the reality is that we all live in uncertain times because the truth is the future is uncertain. You know, our circumstances are uncertain. We never know how things are going to change from day to day. You know, Solomon says in Ecclesiastes 3, chapter 3, verse 1 through 8, there is a time for everything and a season for every activity under heaven, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, and a time to uproot, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down, a time to build, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones and a time to gather them, a time to embrace and a time to refrain, a time to search and a time to give up, a time to give, to keep, and a time to throw away, a time to tear, and a time to tear, and a time to mend, a time to be silent, and a time to speak, a time to love, and a time to hate, and a time for war, and a time for peace. You know, different times will call for different situations. And so as Christians, as Christ followers, as Christ disciples today, what then do we know to be certain? And there's four things I believe that are certain that the Bible tells us. And the first one is that God does not change. 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 29 says, "He who is the glory of Israel does not lie or change his mind, for he is not a man that he would change his mind." Unlike men, we are very double-minded. You know, James talks about that in his first chapter. God is not a double-minded person. God is single-minded and he keeps to what his word. And that's where it goes to God's word does not change. Proverbs chapter 30, verse 5. "Every word of God is flawless. He is a shield to those who take refuge in him." Also, because God's word doesn't change, and therefore God's promises don't change as well. It says, we read here in John chapter 1, verse 1 through 4. "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And he was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of men." You know, here the gospel writer John is trying to reinforce the idea that Jesus Christ is the fulfillment of God's promise that was foretold by the prophets in the Old Testament. And lastly, if God's promises don't change, and God's word doesn't change, and God doesn't change himself, then therefore then the commands that God also puts in his word don't change either. You know, Proverbs chapter 7, verse 2 says, "Keep my commands and you will live. Guard my teachings as the apple of your eye." You know, that's an interesting statement, the apple of my eye. That means it's precious. You know, it's like saying, you know, your child is an apple of your eye. It's like, you know, the child is very precious to you. So God's commands are to be as precious to us as a child is to a parent. You know, John puts a real verse here as well that challenges on this, and he says, "The man who says, 'I know him,' but does not do what he commands is a liar, and the truth is not in him." So therefore, the idea here is that because God's commands don't change, and we as his disciples, we as his people, we are to follow his commands. And if we say we are Christians, then we must follow the commands that God has set out for us. So if we have all this certainty in God, so let's ask a question again. Are we living well in uncertain times? Let's take a moment to reflect on the following. Recently, statistics have come forward, and you can check up on this from Stats Canada and other research places as well, that despite all the wealth that North America continues to have, there is a continual rise in homelessness and poverty. Also, we find that in this generation, there is a greater divorce rate among the boomer generation. And the boomer generation are the generation of people who are now in their 50s and 60s. These were the children of the war, the children of the war, the baby boomers, essentially. And they're all now in their 50s and 60s, and they're all getting divorced. And the reason being is because that they have poured so much of their time and effort into their children, trying to ensure that they don't have to go through another period of war or not having anything, that when it came time when all the kids left the house and it became an empty nest, suddenly mom and dad didn't know each other anymore. They didn't have a relationship. And so what's happening, what we're seeing in this generation, is a whole bunch of adult children whose parents are no longer together, but they themselves, as children, they are, you know, hopefully in solid marriages. And now they're asking themselves, well, what is the point of marriage then? If my parents have been married for 25, 30 years, at the end of that, divorce. What is marriage? What does that say about me and my marriage? Will I end up being like them and divorcing as well? We're also finding there is increase in sexually transmitted diseases among 20 and 30-year-olds. Because of all the free sex and promiscuity and sex before marriage is going on, we're seeing more and more the propagation of different STDs among the 20s and 30-year-olds, and as a result, will have a little impact in our culture, in our society, because with these diseases, sometimes they do affect things like population growth and other things like that. And so, really, you know, these are the kind of things that we're facing with today. There's also increases in addictions to pornography, drugs, and gambling. You know, every year the statistics show that internet pornography is on the rise. The last time I checked, it was something like 300% of all. It has jumped 300% in the last, I think, something like 10 years or something, that the internet has been around. That most of all internet sites are pornographic sites. It's truly, truly scary. Obviously, drugs and gambling are becoming a big thing, and especially in an economic time of recession, you think that gambling would go down, but it's not. Actually, gambling ends up going up because you know people are using their savings to try and make easy money. One of the biggest plagues of our generation is the plague of consumerism. You know, This is the idea that we need to have more and more and more, and we're never content with what we have, and we purchase and we buy, and you know 20% of the world uses 80% of the world's resources. Now, you know, I don't tell you all this to depress you or to create a more pessimistic outlook on life, because it truly can, if you let all of this just sink in, you know, you ask yourself, well, what's the point of living then? I might as well just go and kill myself. Which, unfortunately, what we're also seeing now among the youth is that there's a rise in teen suicide because teens now realize, or they come to the point where they say, well, the world is so screwed up. What's the point in living? What's the purpose of life? And so if there's any time that God's people need to shine, I believe this is that time. This is that time for hope to rise amidst the pain, for clarity to exist among the confusion. And how do we do this? It's as John is saying here, when we as God's people faithfully live out his commands, as 1 John chapter 3, 2 verse 24 states, as those who obey his commands live in him and he live in them, and the world around us will know that he lives because of the spirit he gave us. See, when we are God's people and we faithfully live out his word, we live out his commands, we will be changed. And when we are changed, the world will be changed. So we've established a foundation for biblical discipleship from our last series from the Gospel of John. And if you look through your bulletin again, you'll see this little white page insert. And when we went through the Gospel of John, there were 15 discipleship principles. And I do encourage you today, we're not going to go through them all again, because we've already done that. But I do encourage you today to keep this piece of paper here. Keep it with the Gospel of John. As you're reading through the Gospel of John, reflect upon some of these discipleship principles as we continue to develop this theme of discipleship that we as a church have adopted for this year. Well, now that we've laid this foundation on what biblical Christian discipleship is about, now let's build upon this foundation by moving from the New Testament to the Old Testament, and particularly to the book of Exodus, which, if you hopefully know, is the second book of the Old Testament. And we're going to be focusing particularly on the text of the Ten Commandments. So it's Exodus chapter 20, verse 2 to 17. Now, no doubt, I'm sure you guys are probably thinking in the back of your heads, now why are we again studying the Ten Commandments? I mean, anyone who has really spent any time in church or in Sunday school are very familiar with the Ten Commandments, right? Someone say yes? Yeah. Yes, okay. But I would dare to say, I mean, I would even go far to say is that the average person on the street probably knows the Ten Commandments. But the real challenge, I think, is that I don't think we can actually all recite all Ten Commandments in order. So here's the challenge right this morning. Before I put up the proper before I put up the text this morning. Let's see how many commandments you guys can remember, and see if you guys can actually list them in order. And Grace doesn't count because she just finished the Ten Commandments with the Sunday school class. Sorry, Grace. So, all right. So, what are the Ten Commandments in order? Okay, what's the first one? Nope. Nope, that's not the first one. Anyone else want to give it a try? Nope, second one. That's the second one. No other gods. Yes, that's right, no other gods, yeah. Okay, that's the first one. Second one is don't have any idols. What's the third one? Nope. Okay, Boaz, what's the third one? Do not misuse the Lord's name. Okay, that's three. Number fourth is, that's right, keep the Sabbath. Okay, fifth one. Honor your fathers. Everybody knows that one. Okay, all right. Number six. Nope. Nope. Don't kill. You shall not murder. Okay. Seven. Nope. 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 That's right. Do not commit adultery. All right. Eight. Don't steal. Number nine. Nope. Nope. So what's number nine? Sorry, did I miss someone? Do not bear false witness. All right. And number 10, you shall not covet. That's right. They were. Okay. All right, people, we're going to read through the entire Ten Commandments, okay? So here we go for the first verse. And God spoke all these words. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol in the form of anything in heaven above or on the earth beneath or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of the fathers to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing love to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commandments. So you shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will hold anyone guiltless who misuses his name. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your manservant or maidservant, nor your animals, nor the alien within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that's in them, but he rested on the seventh day, and therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Honor your father and your mother so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you. You shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not give false testimony against your neighbor, you shall not covet your neighbor's house, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or his manservant, or maidservant, his ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. Thank you. Well, I hope that kind of gives you a quick jog of remembering the Ten Commandments. But that's the thing, you know. What we're going to be doing in this next series is we really want to get at the heart of the message of these verses. Because you see, as I said before, most people, they do know what the Ten Commandments are. They believe it as the key principles for what Christians do and what they believe. So from these Ten Commandments, we get ideas like this. Christians don't swear. They don't have sex. Well, then how do we have children? They don't lie, they don't cheat, they don't steal, they don't do drugs, they don't smoke, they don't chew gum, they don't watch movies and don't gamble. Now, I know we laugh about that, but that's really true. Back in the 50s and 60s, my wife's My father-in-law was telling me that that's what they were taught as youth in their church, is that you don't chew gum and you don't go to the movies because it's evil. So there's a perception that Christians don't do a lot of stuff, that we're no fun, that we have no fun, and all we do is sit around and pray and read our Bibles and play Dutch Blitz. Anybody know Dutch Blitz? Hey, there's nothing wrong with Dutch Blitz, right? There's nothing very wrong with that. And yeah, there's nothing wrong with prayer and reading our Bibles. But here's what the problem is. See, what the Bible prescribes, what God says about abundant living, about truly living, becomes simply boiled down to a whole bunch of rules of thou shall not. Anybody who ever grew up reading the King James Version, that's what they read, thou shalt not. And so then Christian living is seen as living by the rules of the church. And honestly, as human beings, do we like rules? No. What do we say? Rules are meant to be broken. So what does rule living really achieve? You know, are people free to live their lives as God intended? Are we weighed down with unnecessary guilt and burdens that we were never meant to carry? All this in an effort to ensure that we love God and are faithful to Him. Because this is what the Pharisees and the Sadducees tried to do in Jesus' day. But they missed God's point entirely in order to achieve a pure religion. You know, as Christ followers, Christ disciples today, we who have had a life-changing, life-transforming encounter with Him, why would we want to follow the Ten Commandments again? You know, this entrapped rather than freed people. Because, as Jesus Himself said, He did not come to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. Furthermore, because we also now have the privilege of being in God's presence for all eternity because of His Son's sacrifice, as Christ's disciples, we are also now to know how to relate to God the Father as we know how to relate to God the Son. And so this morning, you know, I want to equip you as Christ's disciples in the 21st century, living well in the 21st century. Let us look at these Ten Commandments. Not so much in the form that we recognize now, but let us get at the heart of the commandment. And what is God really saying when He says these commandments? And then that way that we as Christ's disciples can know and live these out for a 21st century generation. And so let's look at the first commandment this morning. And God spoke all these words. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You know, to our modern ears, this beginning section, this beginning address, sounds very foreign to us, right? And honestly, it should. It should sound foreign to you because the Ten Commandments were written in the format of ancient royal treaties. And a treaty was pretty much like a negotiation contract today, except that it was less about negotiation, more about how it was going to be under the new ruler. And the format usually began with 3 points. It starts off with a preamble in which the victorious or the great king identified himself. And so in this case, you know, God of the Bible, Yahweh, is introducing himself. I am the Lord, your God, excuse me. Followed by, second, a historical prologue in which he sketched out his previous gracious acts. And he says, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. And then he would outline, now we're going to have the beginning of the treaty stipulations to be obeyed. And the first one is, you shall have no other gods before me. Now, as one commentary explains it, use of this ancient royal treaty pattern shows that the Lord here is formally acknowledged as Israel's king and that Israel is his people. As his subjects, his covenant people are to render complete submission, allegiance, and obedience to him out of gratitude for his mercies, reverence for his sovereignty, and trust in his continuing care. And so what we have here in the first commandment is that it teaches us that God was not to be viewed by Israel as one God among many, nor the best of the gods. He was and is the only living God. He and He alone was to be worshipped, obeyed, and adored by the Israelites. You know, another thing also I need to explain is this word here. The Hebrew words for the English translation of before me really should be translated in hostility toward. And the point being that no deity, real or imagined, is to rival the one true God in Israel's heart and life. And this was their burden. This was their purpose as the privileged recipients of God's revelation to witness this. But as we all know, if you read through the Old Testament, this was not something that Israel achieved, and she ended up being exiled to the lands of Assyria and Babylon as God's punishment. In short, living well begins with loving God first. You know, we don't live anymore in an era of kings and queens who write decrees that their subjects, us, obey without question. In fact, I think we would find it very offensive that someone would write something that told me how I should live, because we just don't do that. But, you know, for a moment here, I'd like us to put ourselves in the Israelite shoes and hear as they would have heard it. See, coming from a time and a culture where, with a strong hierarchical structure, where kingdoms were built and destroyed through war, the Ten Commandments communicated who God was and His heart in a way that made sense to the Israelites. First of all, God identifies Himself as a king. In fact, the one and only divine king, which is what was counter to what they had been told and believed, having lived in the land of Egypt, that essentially Pharaoh was a divine king. But again, if you read through the book of Exodus, which I encourage all of us to do as we go through the Ten Commandments, so he was defeated at the Red Sea, And now the Israelites are to follow a new king. And he is called Elohim. He is Creator God, who ruled in the affairs of men and controlled all nature, as was evidenced by the destruction of Pharaoh's army in the Red Sea. Furthermore, ancient Egyptians practiced a polytheistic faith, where their understanding of the spiritual life included many gods, often attributed to natural forces, who also functioned in a hierarchical structure as well. So there's a big god, a not-so-big god, a lesser god, and really small god. And they were to be feared and revered rather than be gods to have a relationship with. This is a very foreign concept to the Israelites. But this is what God is basically saying in these verses. And here's a modern contemporized version or translation of what this may have, this is what could be saying, what God could be saying to us today, as He said to the Israelites. He says, first of all, I am a gracious and loving God who loved you enough to take you from a place of bondage to freedom. And because I have loved you so much, and I love you so much, I've shown you how much I do love you, I actually don't want to compete for your love. You see, God is deserving of our love because of what He has done for us to free us from the bondage of sin and death and guilt and restore us to life. And that's what happens when we today accept Jesus as God's Son to be our personal Lord and Savior. Essentially, before that, we are sinful. We are meant to die, or we still will die, but we will now be in eternal heavenly presence with God. And so we've gone from bondage to freedom. Now, just so I can put this out here, God desires our love not because He is some egotistical, maniacal, self-involved God and thinks He deserves our love. But basically, as I said, He loves us so much, He doesn't want to compete with anything else in your life, whether it be your degrees, whether it be your career, your relationships, your money, maybe even your beauty. He requires of us our undivided attention. You know, here we're talking about the theme of the simplicity for the month of May as we go through the whole spiritual disciplines and learning the spiritual disciplines. And as I was saying to the youth group last night, spiritual disciplines or the spiritual discipline of simplicity isn't about living with less or having less to live on or having less possessions. Simplicity is essence, or the discipline of simplicity as essence, is about removing or recognizing the things in your life that take your attention away from God, that complicate your life so much that you just don't have time for God. Now, Sue was saying this to us at prayer meeting, that there are times in her life when her life is so busy, that's the time that she knows that she needs to get back to God and put Him first in her life. See, God must be given our absolute priority. And this is the commandment that's the key to all the other commandments. Because unless we commit ourselves to God alone, our hearts will be drawn away from the righteousness that the Ten Commandments decree. You see, for ancient Israel, other gods were often pagan gods, pagan idols. For us, other gods, again, may be the pursuit of wealth or pleasure. See, if our commitment to the Lord is to be complete, keeping the rest of the commandments will flow naturally. But let's be honest. Let's be honest here. The problem for us and the problem for the people of Israelite is we don't love God. Our hearts are, because of the sin, the fall, our hearts are quote-unquote programmed to turn away from God, to turn away from His ways, to not love Him. You know, as moderns, we have dismissed the religions of the ancient Egyptians as ignorant and enlightened people, that they were so silly to attribute God-like qualities to natural forces that they could not understand. Like, for example, the rising of the sun and the setting of the sun, because we now understand it today to be the motion of gravity, and as a result, that's why the sun rises and sun falls. But back then, they didn't understand that, so they attributed it to the sun god Ra. Well, you know, silly people, why do we still believe in that? For that matter, why do we ask, again, these enlightened and scientific society that we live in, why do we continue to live, why do we continue to believe that God is, of the God of the Bible is real? You know, to believe in such a God who oversees us is delusional. And there's a book out there, The God Delusion. You know, it's Ruri Gagarin. Do you guys know that name? Anybody know that name? Yuri Gagarin was a Russian cosmonaut, the first man on Earth who actually circled the Earth. He quoted in his maiden voyage when he got back that I have been to the heavens and I have not seen God, so therefore there is no God. That is the state of our society today. That is the state of our hearts today as we have hardened it towards truly loving, understanding, wanting to know God the Father. See, but the difference is that the difference between Egyptian gods and the God of the Bible is that our God is still alive, that He is not dead, that we didn't just attribute God-like attributes to natural forces, that we truly believe that He does exist. And I can't stand here and convince you that there is a God, but all I can do is I can tell you that He does exist and He is real. And He's real and He's living in and through His people, the church. So, how do we renew our love for God? Not just in ourselves, but also as a society, as a world. And I believe it's when we as God's church, we as God's people, love God first. And what does loving God look like? You know, I don't want to go on a rant here. And trust me, I'm not trying to belittle any worship leader or anything like that. But, you know, as a man, I sometimes find it really weird to be singing these songs that some of these choruses that talk about, you know, I hate to say this, but like Beautiful One or something like that. You know, the whole, I don't know if you guys feel this way, but there's this like weird homoerotic kind of a feeling. Like seriously, like, you know, our God is powerful. He's a king, he's a warrior king. What's this Beautiful One? You know, it's a good song. It's a good song. It is. But you know, like, what's this lovey-dovey, sappy, you know, like, that's not loving God. I don't know. I mean, maybe it is for some of us, because we all express love of God in different ways. But really, I mean, what does loving God look like? And honestly, I look through the Bible. I'm looking through how all the prophets did it. I look at how David did it. I looked at all the other Christian heroes that did it. And everyone expresses love to God in a different way. But I thought one thing that's pretty standard, though, is what I found in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, which we all know, most of us here, is known as the love chapter of the Bible, where it's spelled out very clearly what love is. And I thought about it, and I thought, you know, if there's anything to build upon what it means to love God, then if God loved us first, and that's why we love, and this is God's word and his nature, so maybe this is the way we ought to be also loving God as well. And I can think of four words that fully describe the love text. Self-sacrifice, humility, gratefulness, generosity. You know, we love God when we are willing to put ourselves, to self-sacrifice ourselves, and to put what is first in our lives, and we put it down, and we come before God and say, Lord, you know, I sacrificed my life for you as you have sacrificed your life for me. Humility. You know, the pride of life is so evident in all of our lives. It's evident in my life, evident in your life. Humility. How do we come before God with humility? Gratefulness. How often do we really express our gratitude to God, express that gratitude in love? Generosity. As much as God has loved us, let us be able to take that same measure of God's love and give it to others. You know, whatever God's provided to us, let's give that to others as well. See, when God's people truly love him and express it, the world can't help but take notice. So let's not be shy about the fact that we love God, that we do proclaim that we love God. Let's not be shy about it and be able to give a good reason why you love God. You know, I believe this is why the Apostle John wrote this. It says, he wrote, we love because he first loved us, in 1 John 4:19. And also why Jesus said, by this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. So this morning, as I conclude, I want us to just think about this for a minute, you know? What does it mean to really live well? And do you think that perhaps living well begins when we love God and each other the way that that he has loved us? Now, I want to just also quickly put this out there. I encourage all of us to learn to grow and cultivate our love of God in our lives. And here's an awesome resource. It's a good summer reading. And in fact, this is something I want to do in the fall for our series, and either in small groups or in our messages. And it's called Sacred Pathways. You can find this in any of your local Christian bookstores. And basically, it provides for us 9 ways in which, the author gives us 9 ways in which we can learn to develop our love for God in different ways. Because as I said before, many people, how we express our love for God is very different for each person. And so he gives us examples like we can, you know, some people are naturalists. We love God out of doors. Some of us are activists. We love God through confrontation. Some of us are caregivers. We love God by loving others. Some of us are intellectuals. We love God with the mind. So again, the title of the book here is Sacred Pathways. It's a great summer reading if you want to pick up a book for the summer. And I hope this is something that will be helpful to you as you learn to grow and develop your love for God this morning. So as you've seen, the Kids Church has rejoined us. At this point, I'd like to invite the worship team to come forward. Lead us in a few choruses again to express our love for God. I pray that and I hope that at this time, that as we reflect on the message, that you will be able to express that love in a genuine and authentic way.
Now we stand this morning. Let's just stretch a little bit too. Jesus.
Jesus.